Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the pro wrestling podcast that hates this idea that other pro wrestling podcasts are the best, because they're not. We're the best. We're the best in the world. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the not-quite-straight-edge superstar, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
I'm well, Andrew. I'm very well.
I think that was the most acting I've done in, like, a few years.
I don't know, man. The clothes on the Bray Wyatt episode last time was pretty good.
Oh, that's true. That's
but
true.
I do love that opening, though. When I read the run, she was like, oh, that's good.
I went through a lot of different potential... I went through a lot of different potential things from that pipe bomb to use... But that was the most fun to do out of context, I think.
Absolutely.
Hold on. This is going to be the quickest in the show that I've had to break because a cat was doing something. He's eating a piece of the wall right now.
All right.
I'm not sure how he got the piece of the wall off of the wall.
That'll happen.
But he's eating it. In fact, you know what? I'm going to keep this in because I feel like it's interesting enough. Tyler, how have you been doing? And while you do that, I'm going to pick up this piece of the wall.
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. There's been, so much wrestling news just in the short time that we last recorded. I feel like it comes so quick nowadays. It's very hard to keep up with it.
Yeah, but there's no time to, like, spare or to catch
your breath. There's no time to spare. But it's been great. I was just telling you before, I went to a local wrestling show this past weekend. Support local wrestling. Always do it. I promise you'll have a blast. But it was great. Went to the show in D.C. Joey Ryan was there. I saw a guy get a birthday cake shoved into him. It was awesome.
When you say shoved into him,
thing. The promo was there was like this backstage sort of on-camera girl who, like, it was her birthday. And she was clearly a face. Mm-hmm. People loved her.
Yeah.
And then this heel guy comes out to, like, shoot her down with his valet, who apparently was also her birthday.
Uh-oh.
But the valet was a heel. So the two heels, when they came out, they brought a little birthday cake with them, and they were like, we're not celebrating your birthday, we're celebrating her birthday. And then he, like, sits the birthday cake down, like, somewhere to, like, give his promo. And so the good girl whose birthday it is, picks up the cake, about to, like, throw it into the guy's face. And so here's where it threw me off, because, like, all of media has taught me, if you pick up a cake and, like, you're about to hit a guy with it, you go for the face, right?
Yeah, yeah, so, that's what sitcoms have taught me.
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, she throws a curveball and, like, literally just, like, Kamehameha shoves the cake directly into his chest.
Do you think this was intentional? Or was this a happy accident?
I think it was intentional. Okay. I'm not sure. They made it a spot of, like, he got cake all over him, and then it was on the ground, and he was doing, like, the Vince McMahon in beer, like, couldn't get up and kept slipping into it, which was great.
Oh, that's a really nice touch. That's wonderful.
It was very entertaining. It was a curveball, though. I wasn't ready for that.
You just gave me a great idea in that I like the sound of them taking what is, like, essentially a sitcom-y kind of trope of, mm-hmm. like, oh, these two girls got the same birthday and they're going to be mad about it. And it made me think about how great it would be for a comedy promotion to attempt to do the classic two dates to the same prom setup.
Mm-hmm.
and to do a tag match where one guy has...
he's on both teams.
He's agreed to be the partner for both of them and just keeps having to like change outfits and do quick changes really quickly.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, I think that this needs to happen. Like, I guess maybe the most famous version of this that's coming to mind actually isn't from a sitcom, but it's like the end of Miss Doubtfire.
Yes,
does the two dates to the same prom idea really well. And I feel like that would be amazing. Man, this could have been great for like Santino Marella if he were still.
Wow, he would he would have done it very well too.
Yeah, he would have made that work.
Yeah,
but that's not what we're talking about today at all. We really went on a tangent there.
That's all
right. Yeah, since we last recorded, like right after our last episode about Bray Wyatt, Bray Wyatt became champion.
He did. He did at Crown Jewel. Unfortunately, like it's. How do you feel about it first? Tell me what you think.
About him being champion?
About them putting the title belt on him in Crown Jewel.
It was certainly the most unexpected thing that they could do. I think they needed it, less so did they need to make sure that he had the title than they needed to get the title off of Seth Rollins and kind of reset him.
I think that's good. That's a good point.
I feel like it was actually like a pretty good decision. To do it, doing it at Crown Jewel was unexpected too, because no one expected anything of note to happen there. And boy, did it. We didn't even talk about this since the last time we recorded, I realized, about the shit show that was wrestlers being stranded in Saudi Arabia. I don't know if we had the time to really get into that in the way that does it justice, so I would say go read some Bo getting on the microphone, go read some like think pieces about that. If you didn't see any of this,
it's a highly contested topic about what actually happened.
It would be a while until we know for sure everything.
I think we'll wait until we know a little more for sure to comment on it, but
here's the one hot take I'll ask for, Tyler. Do you think that WWE fulfills their like 10-year contract in Saudi Arabia?
I think that is dependent upon the presence of Vince McMahon in the next decade. But at the same time, it's also Vince McMahon, and he's never going to die. So,
I think they're going to have a situation where they won't have enough people willing to
definitely after this,
even with how big their roster is, I think you're gonna start seeing
how fat that it was just gonna be Brock and Randy wrestling
for 8 hours. It's gonna be great. So that was a pretty big news story we weren't able to do an episode on. We apologize, but that's okay. We have other big news stories.
There
going
was a
on.
Plenty other stuff that happened we can talk about.
We're going to get through some kind of lesser, I don't want to say lesser news, but we're going to, Bo, stop. He really wants to be a guest star in this episode.
He's got a lot of thoughts about Crown Jewel, right?
I think he probably has more about CM Punk, honestly. The big news is that CM Punk has returned to wrestling, and that is going to be something that we are going to talk about a lot in this episode. So know that we are going to get to that. But we're going to get through a few things before we really dive into to CM Punk whole hog. First being, amongst all this crazy stuff that's been happening, Survivor Series is this Sunday. One of the big four WWE pay-per-views.
Snuck up on you, huh?
It's in Chicago, Illinois. Which we will bring up later. Is there a match that you are most excited for on this pay-per-view, Tyler?
Right now, from what they've shown, which I think has been the whole card, I'm really excited for the mid-card triple threat, you could say. AJ Styles versus Roderick Strong versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, whoo-wee! I think that could steal the show if they actually give him time.
Yeah, I think that would be the most rewatchable match, definitely, just on paper, and that you have an amazing rematch from Wrestle Kingdom and WrestleMania that we still feel like we haven't seen the best that the two of them can do together. Plus, you have a rematch of the first match televised
TNA
on Impact.
The
first ever Impact match on Spike.
I remember watching that match.
Yeah, Roderick Strong and AJ Styles. I don't know if Roderick and Nakamura have had much.
Did they ever meet when
in NXT?
When Shinsuke was still in NXT, I wonder.
I don't know.
Maybe in a tag match setting, but I don't think ever one-on-one.
Yeah, I'm excited to see them together, actually. I feel like they would gel very
Ooh,
well.
But
if
did
they?
You think they ever wrestled in Ring of Honor?
I'm going to say, like, Florida Impact Pro may have been, like, if New Japan did a tour of the U.S.
They definitely could have faced in Ring of Honor, because New Japan's been sending guys to Ring of Honor for years.
That's true. I am most excited, actually, and I can't believe I'm saying this, for Brock Lesnar and Rey Mysterio.
Ooh, okay.
I think that we know that Brock can be really good when he wants to be, which is not often, but this is a few years running now where his opponent on Survivor Series gets the best match possible out of him. And Rey Mysterio is someone who, in his first run with the company, Brock worked really, really well with.
Yeah. And also, he's someone that Brock seems to respect and will actually, you know, sell for him and put him over. So
yeah, I still don't see this being as long as the last few Brock Survivor Series matches, just because of the age of Mysterio.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the last one with Daniel Bryan went 20 minutes, which is honestly unheard of for Brock Lesnar. But
yeah. But I think this probably will be there to set up a different storyline, probably involving Kane Velasquez.
I was going to say, do you think Kane makes an appearance at Survivor Series?
If he does, it's in this match. But I think this will kind of be the beginning of maybe what Brock Lesnar's plans for WrestleMania are going to be. Maybe we'll see kind of a little bit about it. Maybe there's someone else who has, you know, a history with him. Maybe another MMA fighter who was managed by Paul Heyman. But again, we'll get into that later. We've also got, headlining this, we've got Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend. Do you think that's the right person to have The Fiend go up against after winning the title?
I think so. I think having The Fiend go over Bryan is a great way to, like, legitimize him right off the bat. For those who weren't convinced of him, his Seth feud, which I wouldn't blame them. It really wasn't great. but so I think it's a great way to legitimize him right off the start. But my worry is that the Daniel Bryan right now in storyline has been, like, teetering between his previous heel persona, like, back into a face mode. And we just know historically that no one is more over than face Daniel Bryan. And so I don't know if it's a good idea putting the heel up against someone that the audience loves that much, because you're pushing The Fiend and you really want him to get over with the crowd, which he currently is, but this is dangerous.
Yeah, I feel like this probably isn't a long-term storyline. It's more like to give them both something to do right now while they figure out what they're going to do next. So that's why I'm kind of okay with Bryan going in there to probably do the job and
which he probably will.
Yeah. But I think that I don't know that will really hurt Daniel. Sorry, I don't know if that will really hurt Daniel all that much, because I feel like he will be rebooted very strongly as a straight up heel or a straight up face very, very soon.
Yeah.
We've also got a running storyline throughout the card that I think will probably end up being the prominent angle of the night, and that is that this is not just Raw versus SmackDown with their new rosters, of which I still haven't figured out. It's Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT. Does that do anything for you as a viewer for this?
Somewhat. I mean, as a longtime fan of NXT, I am excited just to see everyone intermingled, mostly because this is the first time that they're going to be having this interbrand warfare where NXT is technically on the same level as Raw and SmackDown. So I'm hoping that they treat the NXT superstars that, like, accordingly, and some, you know, they look really well. I remember when they first started this NXT Invasion Survivor Series angle, when NXT invaded Raw, NXT looked amazing that Raw. Mm-hmm. Like, they invaded every segment and dominated every segment, and they looked great. Not so much on SmackDown and like in the following weeks. Just last week on SmackDown, a lot of the NXT women who like showed up, they kind of jobbed them out a little bit. But yeah. So I'm hopeful for it. I think they're going to be great. It allows for such great matchups that we never thought we would be seeing. Like, I'm super excited to see Shayna Baszler mix it up with Becky Lynch and Bayley. Like, mm-hmm. I think she can really legitimize herself as, no, I'm also an amazing women's champion. So
yeah, I would love to see that be a DQ finish and have, like, it could, like, end early and be more of a brawl to kind of get Shayna kind of preemptively on the same level as them. Because mm-hmm. I think she's probably not want for long in NXT. You're also going to have the Undisputed Era going up against the New Day and the Viking Raiders, and that feels just like a NXT match anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a traditional 5-on-5 match, both for the men and the women. We don't know who is on the NXT men's or women's teams yet,
mm-hmm.
but we know it won't be the Undisputed Era, at least everyone except for Adam Cole, because they're already on this card, and there's not going to be Shayna Baszler. So who do you kind of think is going to be featured? Do you think it makes sense to have NXT go over?
I think because, like, if we're going off historically, Vince McMahon has a favoritism of Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Given last year, Raw literally sweep the card. They won every match.
That's true.
So I'm hoping that things are a little more even this year. I could see SmackDown getting the most wins just to, appease some Fox people who might not be that happy with how well it's been going so far. So I think that's possible. I'm really hoping that I feel like NXT's got to win at least a match, and the 5-on-5 feels like it would be the least detrimental to Raw and SmackDown to lose. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think this is what I think is really going to happen, is I think a year removed from Raw winning everything, that Raw will win no matches.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because you have two other brands that need help in the ratings for very monetary reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would make the most sense to push NXT and have them go over.
Oh yeah.
Maybe that's just like it. They're the, like, sure, Fox is having some problems, but I think that they will ultimately be fine on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
NXT is direct competition.
I was going to say, going off that, like, NXT is yet to beat AEW in ratings. So maybe this is them giving them the push needed, hopefully.
Yeah. I think that makes the most sense to me, at least. But, you know, I'm not the one booking it. So,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that is happening on Sunday. Happening in the future, in late January, is the return of a pay-per-view that I certainly liked a lot as a kid, in the sense that I would always play at it when I would play WCW versus NWO Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Is Bash of the Beach is going to be the branding for an episode of AEW Dynamite from aboard the Chris Jericho cruise, the Cruise of Jericho. And this is going to be happening in January, January 22nd, I believe. The first big question, Tyler, how do you feel about this? And how did they get the rights to this name?
Oh, I love it, man. I, too, am a big fan of Bash at the Beach. That was my go-to arena on some old school 64 wrestling games.
Mm-hmm. But this was a WCW pay-per-view, which, as far as we know, WWE owns all the intellectual property of.
I think it gets into gray waters with that, just that, I'm pretty sure Bash at the Beach was another Dusty Rhodes, creation. Mm-hmm.
Sure was.
Which, I think that's where it makes things a little meh. But at the same time, like, I'm also confused on it because WWE clearly still has the rights to Starrcade. So,
and War Games as well.
And War
Another
Games.
Thing.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I mean, do you have some insider information on this, Mr.
I
Cable?
Sure do. I consulted with my inside source, which is also known as the internet. And it kind of came out earlier today that in the last few years, WWE has had a lot of trademarks that were expiring and let them go. And Bash at the Beach is there, like, there's a whole list, but Bash at the Beach is the one that made the least sense to me for them to get rid of. But
I mean, it's such a fun pay-per-view. Like,
it is. It's also like a great name
right now. They have no need.
Yeah.
To...
Maybe they just didn't at the time. Well, they should have, because this was in March that a bunch of these trademarks expired that I would not let anything expire that had any kind of tie to the Rhodes family. But they did. So Cody Rhodes does own the trademark to Bash at the Beach and has since March. So that is why they're able to make this happen. I also have a list of some other trademarks that they have that maybe will be future pay-per-views for AEW. Blood and Guts is now one they have the...
That's a joke.
I think that's more for merchandising than like a pay-per-view name. That was the criticism that Vince McMahon lobbied at AEW, is that they're more of a blood and guts company. Hold on.
Their marketing department is incredible.
I'm trying to find the other list. There was, he also got, the one that's important is that Cody also has the Match Beyond, which is the name of the overtime match in a War Games match. So now they could certainly do their own version of War Games and call it The Match Beyond.
The Match Beyond.
Yeah. So this Bash at the Beach in AEW won't be a pay-per-view, but it will be like a special episode of Dynamite. What does this say about the structure of pay-per-views for AEW? Do you think that this is a good idea to go the like featured show route, or would you rather them have more straight-up pay-per-views?
So I'm not sure the legitimacy of this, but I have heard, I think read, that AEW right now is going to be leaning towards a more quarterly pay-per-view model rather than the monthly thing that WWE's held forever. Which four pay-per-views a year, I'm totally cool with. Just now that, given that AEW is still very new and they don't have the same resources available to them that WWE does, their pay-per-views are just old school pay-per-views, and that, like, you gotta dish out $50 for them, and that's that. Which I did for Full Gear.
Yeah, I did as well.
And it felt it was like a weird, like, nostalgia, but not nostalgia that you enjoy.
Yeah,
like, dropping $50 to watch a 3-hour movie, basically. And I was like, oh man, but no, I gotta support the cause, so I got Full Gear. If I only have to do that four times a year, like, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it still is more, it's double what paying for the WWE network for a year is.
Exactly.
Which isn't great. At least you do get to keep the pay-per-view broadcast forever through Bleacher Report, because old school pay-per-views, if you bought it, you had to go also buy a VHS tape that was formatted for 6 hours and like run it at the same time.
Record it.
Make sure you don't accidentally change the channel. this is an aside, but it's a fun one. They used to do on the last Raw and SmackDown of every year in the early 2000s, they didn't have a live show because it was like New Year's. So instead they would do the top 10 matches of the year, and most of them were pay-per-view matches that were shown on free TV, which for a kid with no money like me, that was like the way that I would get to see these. So I would every year record this last episode, and I would stay up and watch it, and it was kind of late for me. And there's one that if I go back and watch it, it's gotta be like the best of 2000 or 2001, where the best match, the number one match, was the Three Stages of Hell at Backlash between Triple H and Steve Austin.
I think I remember this match. Yeah.
And there's a really big moment, like a big shot with the the bell, the like bell at the ringside.
Mm-hmm.
And during this, right as he's winding up to do this like bell shot, I checked over to the TV Guide channel to see how close I was to midnight, and then came back right after this shot. And if I go back and rewatch it on VHS now, I'm like, oh yeah, I got bored for a moment and like switched during the best part of this match. Mm. That's beside my point, clearly, because it got me off track. But I agree that like it's weird because WWE has devalued the pay-per-view so much in recent years because it feels like it's free because of the monthly charge and that you can go back and watch it anytime on your own dime or on your own time, rather.
Yeah.
So it's I agree that like the less a pay-per-view happens for AEW, like because they don't have the infrastructure to have a network.
At least not yet.
Yeah. If you can't do the thing that the competitor is doing, that's great. Then you have to go the other way and just try to make it feel like a must buy thing.
Yeah. Which I honestly think they did. The lead up to Full Gear was great. A lot of something that I think AEW excels at, like, I would argue on the same level that WWE does, their video packages, like for match promos, are already like top notch. Some of those packages, I was like, "Yep, I'm in. Let's do it. Here's my money."
Yeah, their hour long show that came out before that TNT had been running at weird times is basically an hour long infomercial. That was what it's like. Much better than a go home show. Is for me. It feel it's like what MMA and what boxing does, and it works really well for AEW because they have to sell something in a much different way than WWE does now.
Yeah,
but I agree. Like it's great, but like it definitely there are going to be times where I don't want to spend the $50.
Yeah, but you know we'll see.
Yeah,
I do like the idea of just like less. Not pay-per-views, but just more important weekly shows.
Mm-hmm. I think that they need to use the ranking system and the weekly rankings and stuff like that to make the weekly television more important. Right now, it's fine because it is a new thing, so it does feel important week to week. But there is going to be a point where they are going to have to, where that luster is going to wear off, and they have to really make it feel like a title can change on TV, which I feel like is the big issue with WWE, is it feels like nothing that important will ever happen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about the most important thing that's going to happen on TV. So I think we all know that something I'm really into is Jeopardy. And Jeopardy James Holzhauer, recently won the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions. This is the guy who last year had a pretty long winning streak and was winning like crazy amounts of money every episode. Mm-hmm. You probably heard about him even if you don't watch Jeopardy. Well, they're doing this new matchup, this triple threat matchup. First person to win three matches wins, between James, Ken Jennings, the original big Jeopardy guy who everyone knows, and Brad Reuter, who has won a number of Jeopardy tournaments and has actually won the most money on that show out of anybody ever. Okay. So they're having the three of them together, and that was announced today. Why we're talking about
the champion of champions.
Yeah, the champion of champions of champion. I think it's
the Jeopardy Clash of Champions.
I think it's actually being listed as the battle to see who's the best of all time. And why this is important is that everyone needs to go to James Holzhauer's Twitter, because he made me endeared with him much more today when he word for word used his Twitter in the like official tweet from Jeopardy about this to give the Scott Steiner math promo. And in inserting Ken Jennings in the Samoa Joe role,
oh my God,
and Brad Reuter in the Kurt Angle role.
Oh.
And I'm sure that it was very confusing for the normal Jeopardy demographic.
But for me,
it was fantastic.
I want this guy to win. He's my pick. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is a wonderful tweet. It's like a multiple tweet too. It's like a part two of three kind of thing, because he wants to get the entire thing in. He doesn't call Ken Jennings a fat ass, but beyond that, the entire promo is in there.
So
check that out. Which is great. We're almost halfway through the show, which means we are right on track It's time. It's clobbering time to talk about CM Punk. So, if you had asked us before we started this podcast, what would be the biggest news item that you can conceive happening in the next few years of wrestling, what would we have said, Tyler?
Let's see. Yeah, it's CM Punk coming back. That's nothing else.
Yeah, CM Punk's return to wrestling seemed like the least likely thing. It would be the biggest news story. Well, it just happened. It doesn't feel like the biggest news story, but it seems like it could be the preamble to something big. His return's about to happen. It's in a situation we never would have guessed. CM Punk made a surprise appearance to close out last week's episode of WWE Backstage. If you don't know what that is, that is FS1's studio analysis show, and it's kind of the spiritual successor to Talking Smack. Mm-hmm. And he will make his first full episode appearance Tuesday night at 11 p.m. on FS1. It will be replayed a lot later, don't worry.
Yeah.
I will not be up at 11 p.m. We thought this marked as good a time as ever to discuss the Straight Edge Superstar at length, so we're going to answer the 5 W's about CM Punk, focusing on his past, present, and future, or his then, now, forever, whatever floats your boat. So first, we got to start the question, and we're really going to approach this for new fans and for the people who have come back into wrestling in the last few years, because CM Punk, you may have missed his entire career.
And also, people have been talking about CM Punk for a long time, but he hasn't been affiliated with wrestling for a very long time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So this might really legitimately be the first time that a lot of you have heard about this. So first, who is CM Punk? Tyler, how would you describe his character?
Well, I was going to just say Phil Brooks.
Next Phil question. Brooks. Yeah, Phil CM Punk Brooks.
CM Punk is Phil Brooks. He's a native Chicagoan. Mm-hmm. Is it Chicagoan? Chicagian?
Chicagoan. He's from the Windy City.
The Windy City, yes. So CM Punk is a wrestler.
He's an Illinois maker.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
CM Punk is a professional wrestler. He started out on the indie scene and made his name in promotions like Ring of Honor. And
IWA Mid-South. That's, I think, the first ones I've seen him in, which are crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
But the reason why CM Punk is important, because traditionally when CM Punk broke out into the mainstream, into the WWE, it was around 2006, 2007 time. Or no,
yeah, he comes into Ohio Valley Wrestling, which was like NXT before NXT, in 2005, yeah. And then yes. He is on WWE ECW in 2006. That is when he right. first shows up.
So, a lot of he was one of the first like indie guys. CM Punk was known for being an indie wrestler who got to WWE main roster and then very quickly was being pushed because he was getting over with the WWE audience in a way that you hadn't seen superstars before, just because it was all the established superstars at the time were, you know, WWE and ECW, or I'm sorry, WCW, ECW guys for years and years, and those were never considered the indie wrestling promotions. This was one of the first times an indie guy who had no affiliation with WWE or WCW or those companies, like, really, you know, getting pushed and making a star of himself.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to note that he has a few contemporaries who are also indie guys who come in with him or around the same time as him, and that is Cesaro and Daniel Bryan.
Oh my God, Cesaro came around the same time?
Like a year later.
No way.
Yeah, they all kind of came in at similar times.
Daniel Bryan?
Yeah, hold on. I feel like I need to get the exact dates so that I don't look like a jabroni right now.
Okay.
Cesaro came in a little bit later than I had guessed. He came in 2010. But Daniel Bryan definitely was closer to the start date than Punk. He came into WWE in 2008. So yeah, that's pretty close to Punk. Yeah. They're all within the same era of wrestling. Mm-hmm. But those two guys, even after Punk, were not able to keep the independent name that they had made famous. Mm-hmm. CM Punk came in and was like, "My name is CM Punk." And that, I think that actually was like the first thing he said in a promo. I didn't even mean to make that thing. But like a big part of CM Punk's legacy in WWE is that he succeeded and got over in spite of creative and booking, because the agents, the producers at the time didn't know what a CM Punk was, and didn't, like, when they looked at him, they didn't see someone who had potential, because he was smaller than everyone. He looked greasy and dirty. And yep. he had
the long hair, yeah, the tattoos.
He had a lot of tattoos, a lot of piercings, and he wrestled in what now we kind of recognize as Japanese strong style, which has become like the kind of like go-to preset for a lot of wrestlers coming into WWE. Mm-hmm. So he was doing a lot of things that they didn't have anyone who was doing at the time. And people didn't know what a CM Punk was. They didn't get the name.
I remember when he debuted for ECW, and I had never heard of him. I wasn't familiar with the indie wrestling scene, and I was like, CM Punk. What a weird name.
Yeah. We can get into that for a second here. The CM, he said in a bunch of different interviews, he's given different things that it stands for, because as you also learn about Punk, he can be pretty abrasive and is kind of a shit stirrer. So there's lots of things that he said that it stands for. What is kind of the understood thing is that when he was first a backyard wrestler, he was in a tag team called the Chick Magnets with another wrestler, and they were CM Venom and CM Punk. You know, it feels like a backyard wrestling name, because it was. Yeah. And he had just like stuck with that forever. So the CM probably stands for Chick Magnet. But he comes into WWE. He gets over in spite of people not understanding who he was, which is crazy to me, because I think he has one of the most clear-cut gimmicks of anyone out there. So he's the straight-edge superstar. And what exactly does that mean, Tyler?
He does not partake in the worldly pleasures of alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, no drugs, no alcohol goes into his body. Mm-hmm. And for me, why this is maybe a top five gimmick all time in wrestling is that it works perfectly as both a heel and a face. If you're the face who's straight edge, you are a role model to children, and that you are not going to abuse a body with illegal substances. And if you're the face, you look at the people drinking beer in the first row and you say, "I'm here and you're not, because I'm better than you because you drink and I'm above that." Mm-hmm. And that has worked as his character beginning in the indies. It worked from there on. Mm-hmm. And his character is certainly taken on different aspects since then, but it kind of always boils down to the straight edge idea. I mean, it's evident in his gear as well. There's the X's that are written on his hands that are to mirror what happens if you try to get into a club and you're under 21. Which I feel like you knew something about working the door at Hoagie House before.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You made a noise. You made a noise like you were like, "Please don't bring this up."
No, that's fine.
So he was the poster boy for independent wrestling. He was one of the first people in like shoot videos, trashing WWE and being like, "I am an artist above this. I'm never going there." So it was a bit surprising when he went there, because it also, there was an idea that like, why would they want him? And it seemed like he came to WWE because Paul Heyman wanted him there. Paul Heyman had been scouting him since the fold of ECW. He was someone who was going to be brought in, had it kept going. He came in at a time when Paul Heyman had some control over TV, and then very quickly Paul Heyman was gone. So then CM Punk had to float or sink on his own, and there were lots of moments where it kind of looked like either could happen. But in the end, he becomes one of the few people who you could say was the face of the company in WWE. What do you think? And he also left the company, and we'll get into that in a different W.
Oh, yeah. Here. We can't not talk about that.
But he left, and what do you think he's left behind? If you look at WWE programming the last few years without him there, what kind of sprinkles of CM Punk have remained?
I think the biggest thing is that CM Punk undoubtedly changed what WWE saw as the potential guy, as the face of their company, as the top champion. Because, I mean, before CM Punk, you had smaller guys who were given the title and gave them the chance to run with it, but it wasn't the same effect. Guys like Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, like not the biggest guys, but like organically got over with the crowd to the point that management couldn't deny them, and they were like, all right, we'll give you the title.
Yeah, it was a long lead-in process where now you can be smaller and kind of already be at the top.
Yeah, and then you think after post CM Punk, there's guys like the biggest thing is Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Bryan is what, 5'9"?
he's listed at 5'9", which he's not.
I was gonna say short, but that's just from me. He's a very average size man.
yeah.
And Daniel Bryan would not be a thing if not for CM Punk. I mean, it's very simple. I think Daniel Bryan would have gotten over with the crowd like very similarly, and maybe organically worked his way up to champion without CM Punk existing. But he wouldn't be like the Daniel Bryan from the Yes Movement. The Yes Movement itself wouldn't have had the fire and the passion behind it that I think initially began with what CM Punk did, pipe bomb and everything.
Yeah. I think you also, not just like that WWE is looking at smaller wrestlers and immediately pushing them, I think you also see a bigger influence of strong style and MMA technique and like acknowledgments of real sport, of real combat sport. The go to sleep that he took from Kenta and made his finisher was really like one of the only striking finishers that was in WWE at the time, and now there are so many finishers that are just like a kick
or a particular punch.
Yeah, it was a lot of like very like convoluted wrestling moves, you know, like things that you can't set up naturally. Yeah. And I think since then, now it's like I would kill to see someone with a power bomb as a finisher.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's like 100% shifted, where the majority of finishers now are strikes, whether it be kicks or knees or
and it's like the only difference between Daniel Bryan's finishing knee and Shinsuke Nakamura's finishing knee is the person delivering it, really. There's nothing to differentiate it besides who's delivering the kick,
right?
We also wouldn't have wrestlers who have independent or otherworldly credits acknowledged. In the pipe bomb, CM Punk references Ring of Honor and New Japan Wrestling, and that was a big no-no that was very taboo at the time. And now AJ Styles shows up, and first of all, he gets to be AJ Styles.
Yeah, that was huge.
Samoa Joe gets to be Samoa Joe, and when they come in, the announcers say, oh, well, you got to watch out for this guy because he has wrestled in this place.
He's made his name around the world.
Yeah, he's been a guy in Japan, but they'll even mention particular titles now. They'll say, like, this guy was a champion in TNA, or this guy was the IWGP heavyweight champion.
It's weird. They're cool with mentioning TNA now by name.
Yeah.
And they mention the IWGP title by name,
but not New Japan.
Have yet to say New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. So but there's definitely a more of a reference to... I mean, there's an Evolve show on the WWE Network, and that would not have happened without CM Punk.
That's true. That
very honestly. So CM Punk, even if he'd left WWE in a place because he was very upset with how it was going, a lot of the things he was mad about were corrected, honestly. Like, he made it a better place to work for the people who came after him. So let's move on. to what
to our next W.
Yeah. What is CM Punk?
I'm just going to give you like the basis of answers. He's a pro wrestler.
Great, thank you. Moving on to the next one. No, what are his most memorable moments and matches and feuds that pop into mind? We can't really go super long on this, but what are the ones that stick out?
I mean, number one, obviously, you can't not mention the pipe bomb.
Mm-hmm. That's going to go down as like the top thing in his career.
Yeah. We'll give a quick synopsis for those who have no idea what we're talking about. We're not talking about an explosive device. That's not a thing.
Nope. We'll save that for the next Crown Jewel show.
The pipe bomb is a promo that CM Punk gave on Raw one night. It's arguably one of the most famous promos in professional wrestling. Certainly the most famous promo in the last 20 years. I'd say. Well, how long ago was the Austin 316 promo?
That was like in 1996.
Six? Maybe? We're good.
Yeah, we're good.
We're good. But yeah, it's just I don't think I watched it live when it happened, but it was one of those like what's the word I'm looking? It was to quote John Moxley, it was a paradigm shift.
it was a paradigm shift. It was a turning point. It was a moment that brought lapsed fans back into wrestling. It kind of jump-started the reality era.
Honestly, I was one of those fans. The pipe bomb brought me back.
It's the only pro wrestling promo that I know of that is annotated on genius.com along with a bunch of rap songs. Like, you could go look at the annotated version of that speech.
Wow. But yes, we wanted to keep it concise. It was a very important promo that he gave where he completely he breaks the fourth wall, and he to use wrestling terminology, he shoots on a lot of things about his frustrations with WWE at the time, with the industry itself, other performers, the McMahon family, and it was just so raw and new and real that it was just the talk of the town, basically. Mm-hmm.
It was so different from everything else that WWE had been programming for the last 5 years, which was kind of CM Punk at that time in a nutshell. Like, no one else looked like him, and no one else moved or talked like him. And this was at the height, or not even the height, kind of the like beginning of the decline of John Cena's time in WWE.
I think this was the beginning of people being like, John Cena sucks.
I think it was the most that they had seen just how homogenous everything, because like what John Cena did worked for John Cena, and it didn't necessarily work for everyone else, but it didn't stop WWE
trying. It was CM Punk just like pulled the curtain back for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and it did. Like, it was real. It was really how he felt, and people really bought it as the setup of his contract's running out and he's gonna try to leave with the title.
Have you actually ever heard the story of the pipe bomb and like how it happened?
I know that he was told backstage that they were sick of writing stuff for him to say on TV and having him tear it up, that they were basically told him like, hey, Vince wants you to just go out there and say whatever you want.
Basically, they reviewed it on like one of the WWE documentaries they did about CM Punk, but it's so wild him telling it. He was like, I basically showed up to the arena, and the writer who had been writing for him for a while, and they were like equally frustrated, he walked up and he was just like, they're gonna give you a live mic and they want you to air your grievances.
Which is lovely.
It's lovely, but also like, if you think within the context of it, you're just like, what were they thinking?
Well, I imagine is that someone had watched CM Punk's departure from Ring of Honor, where he was a god, and he turned into a heel by doing a pretty similar story where he was like, I'm going to sell out, go to WWE, air my grievances about what I don't like about indie wrestling, and I'm going to take the Ring of Honor title with me. Mm-hmm. So they kind of run it back, but flipping who the good guy and bad guy is, and it works perfectly. And I think that was probably something lost on a lot of the viewers at the time. They didn't realize they were seeing like a re-recording of an earlier hit. But man, did it work with the amount of audience that he had. Mm-hmm. And it led to, I think, what a lot of people believe to be his best match in WWE. It was one of the most recent 5-star matches in WWE. And this was mm-hmm. the Money in the Bank main event from 2017 in Chicago. And this is John Cena versus
2011.
CM Punk. Did I say 2017? Wow, I was wrong. 2011. I'm sorry. My years have not been great on this podcast.
It's all right.
So far.
A one can look like a seven. I get it.
Yeah, that's true. What's the first thing that sticks out in this match when you think about it?
Punk. For me, the lasting image I can't get out of my head is Punk blowing Vince McMahon the kiss at the end.
Oh, what a great combination of really good in-ring work, really mm-hmm. hot crowd, and really good WWE shticky gaga, all of it together. It's mm-hmm. really great.
But I was going to say, so talking back to the point of CM Punk's most memorable moments, the pipe bomb led into this great feud with John Cena, which culminated in this amazing match. The match itself is really good. The stipulation for the match, of course, is the night of Money in the Bank, CM Punk's contract was up at midnight. So at midnight, he was no longer a WWE employee. And so that was the story going into the match, that he has a title match the same night. And if he wins that title, suddenly the WWE champion is not going to be employed by WWE, which in itself, that's an amazing storyline. How can you not just be what is going to happen? And the shocking part was that he won when CM Punk won.
It seemed like an impossible corner they backed themselves into.
Yeah. And then he left the arena. He left through the crowd, through the amazing Chicago crowd, with the WWE title seemingly off into the sunset, never to be seen again.
Until a month later. But
until a month later. But it was amazing. Mm-hmm.
I think to his detriment, his character in WWE after that became the guy who does work shoots, and he was kind of asked to do those all the time to varying levels of success.
Yeah. You could tell that WWE very much tried to capitalize on it, where they were we're going to have you go out there and say things that seem like you're just saying whatever you want, but you could tell that it was a subdued version of what he would want to say.
Mm-hmm. But the next few years are very successful for CM Punk in WWE. Mm-hmm. He has a run with the WWE Championship that lasts for 434 days, mm-hmm. and he drops the title belt to The Rock, and there are much worse people you could drop it to. He has a few other notable feuds with The Undertaker. He has a really great Undertaker WrestleMania match with him right after the death of Paul Bearer.
But that mm-hmm. feud was honestly really great because they had brought back the urn of The mm-hmm. Undertaker, which had been missing for a few years, and having that story element to play with, I think, was great.
Yeah. You also have a great feud with Chris Jericho, where Chris Jericho boasts how much he likes drinking, which he's done again recently with the bubbly.
He's doubled back on.
Their battle for best in the world was really great. And then you have this kind of long storyline feud between him, Triple H, and Kevin Nash, which mm-hmm. was weird because he never really had the match with Triple H, and Kevin Nash couldn't really have a match at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting feud to go back and look at, but one that I feel was incomplete. Towards the end of his run, CM Punk seems a bit bored. He works with Brock Lesnar once, and it's pretty good. He is the reason that storyline that The Shield comes in. He's also, I guess, it was the person who created that idea mm-hmm. as well. Although he wanted Chris Hero in there instead of Roman Reigns. And then he leaves. He leaves because he is fed up with working there. He is fed up with the medical treatment over a MRSA infection, depending on who you ask. And after the Royal Rumble, he leaves. He walks out, he quits. There's a lot that goes on there. He quits, but he's still under contract, and apparently he has faxed his termination papers on the day of his wedding.
Oh, yeah.
He then does a podcast episode with Colt Cabana where he airs his grievances without talking to a lawyer first, which was a mistake. And he really gets into the weeds and says a lot of things on record about his dislike of WWE. And then he signs with the UFC. What experience did CM Punk have as an MMA fighter before this, Tyler?
Big old goose egg.
Yeah, he had no experience. Do you remember what your reaction was when you heard that he was going to be fighting in the UFC?
I think I was like, I didn't write him off immediately. I've watched UFC MMA since probably around like 2004, 2005 time. I didn't write him off immediately. He seemed like a fairly athletic guy who, given the right amount of training, like maybe could put up a fight. And because I also, I think when he had signed, like obviously there was no like date of when he was going to be fighting. So it seemed like he had a lot of time to get ready to train and get prepared. But that was not right. That was wrong. He did not do well in UFC. For the two fights that he had, he was handedly beaten, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, he's done some commentary for MMA since then. He's always been good at commentary. He's a great talker.
Yes.
Even in WWE,
even on commentary,
too. Yeah, he
no
was great in commentary for NXT, the TV show on Sci-Fi, and also for a while he was hurt, he was doing commentary. He's had varying degrees of it with MMA. I know he had an incident where he had to fight a fan. Do you remember seeing this?
Whoa.
Last year at a smaller promotion that he was doing MMA commentary for, where a fan was allowed to come up to the commentary booth and got in his face, and he
really?
Like, it was not a good look.
No, it's never a good look.
Yeah. So he's done some other stuff post-wrestling as well. He's been pretty adamant that he was burned out, not just in WWE, but on wrestling as well.
Yeah.
And doesn't watch it. He's written some comics since then. Mm-hmm. He has shown up as an actor in some television shows. He has a movie at Sundance this year that did really well, apparently. Mm-hmm. He's kind of bounced around. And he's been on a season of the MTV, MTV's The Challenge, which he did not win. And now he's found himself back on WWE programming, although probably as an employee of Fox.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think brings us to why CM Punk. Why does it matter so much that he's back in any capacity at all?
I mean, just that he said he wasn't ever coming back. so that's the number one thing. The biggest shocker is that it is tangentially with WWE, who he left the entire business of professional wrestling because of his frustrations with WWE as a company. And to be fair, WWE has changed. I would say has changed a decent amount since he left. But ultimately, the people in charge are still the same. And he very recently just got to close the book on that lawsuit with WWE. So the idea of him returning to wrestling was already pretty far-fetched. But the idea of him returning to wrestling with WWE was next to impossible.
Yeah, there's an old saying in WWE that it's like, never say never, because plenty of people had bad blood with the company and left. Bret Hart was one that I never thought would happen, and he has returned.
Bret Hart would arguably be the next biggest like name to actually shockingly return.
CM Punk and Bret Hart are the two like heads and tails above anyone else, and like crazy just because of the lawsuits. I feel
Then there's like other names that were also shocking coming back. Like
Hulk Hogan was
Warrior
one.
And
Warrior was
Hogan
one.
And
there's been a few other big ones too, but like Bret Hart is the biggest, and CM Punk is the biggest in our time. And it's not just because he had a lawsuit with the company where he put into question their ability to care for the well-being of their employees, because that was the matter at hand. Although WWE did not represent that doctor in the lawsuit, which I think is a big part of why this reconciliation was possible. Mm-hmm. It was just the doctor. But what was also surprising about this is that CM Punk, and we are both big CM Punk fans, a big thing that people criticize him for, and probably correctly, is that he, I don't even want to say burns bridges, but he...
He doesn't seem like a super pleasant guy.
Yeah, he definitely like claims that people are dead to him and holds on to that. Yeah. He has a brother he doesn't speak to because he stole money from him in high school and a little bit after that. He doesn't speak to his actual parents. Like, his family is mm-hmm. like another family that took him in. His best friend, Colt Cabana, who he was in this lawsuit on the same side with, mm-hmm. apparently now they don't speak to each other anymore within yeah. like the last year because of arguments over who was paying for the legal fees. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that seem to, like, it seems like he's someone you can get on the wrong or right day. And he certainly has had a lot of bad things to say about Triple H and Vince McMahon in particular. So now that those are the two people who have the most control in the company, it's odd that he would be back, but I guess he technically isn't all the way back.
Yeah.
But he's definitely gone from in interviews being like, I know you're going to ask me about wrestling, but I'm never doing it, to if the bag is big enough, I'll yep. come and do a match.
Make me
offer. I'll at least talk to them. It's also important because he's the biggest free agent left in wrestling in a time when yep. now it would really hurt WWE if Punk wrestled again, because he would have a big platform to do it on. Mm-hmm. How shocked are you that he did not end up in AEW?
Honestly, like, very.
Yeah.
I think because there's been rumors that he would go to AEW since AEW was a thing. And around that time was when he started to change his tone to the, well, you know, make me a real offer. And there was all these reports that, like, the Young Bucks were, you know, in contact with Punk, trying to get him to come to AEW. And from what we kept hearing of these reports was that there was no, like, real concrete offer. And Punk kept being like, well, you know, you can say, hey, come to my show, like, we'll do something great, but that's not a real offer. And what he wanted was, you know, basically written on paper. And so, like, my wrestling brain tells me that if it keeps, like, being like, oh, this isn't going to happen, that, like, it's probably going to happen. So, like, him like going that. Back to WWE is definitely the biggest shocker. But, I mean, AEW seemed like the perfect place for him.
Yeah, I think the more that people like you and I or other fans or other wrestlers said, like, well, it makes so much sense for yeah. him to be there. CM Punk does not seem like the kind of guy who does something because everyone tells him that he should do it. In fact, it seems like maybe that's the worst thing we could do.
I was going to say, I get that, but, like, at some point there's a level of, like, doing the opposite of what everyone else is telling you to do is the bad choice. And I don't know that it's a bad choice that he is now affiliated with WWE again, but I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think we should get into this affiliation at this point. I think we've explained well enough who he is and why we're talking about him. I think we need to say now, where is CM Punk going now that he's WWE adjacent? So I want to give a little bit of context. So he's on WWE backstage. He's going to be a pretty frequent contributor to that show. That is a show that is run by Fox with the help of WWE. CM Punk tweeted today. He said, quote, "It is weird trying to catch up on 5+ years of wrestling. I'm doing what I can. There's bright spots, mostly women, from what I can tell. There's bad, too. I'm going to talk about it, and no one is safe. Join us tagging Renee Young, WWE on Fox, Booker T, Paige, Vince McMahon, and Tony Khan. Mm-hmm. What do you make of him also tagging an AEW source in there?
I don't know. I think again, Punk is not one to be told what to do. And also being that he is now on this like Fox show that yes is affiliated with WWE. I mean, I'm fairly certain, like, I don't think he necessarily even signed a contract with WWE to be on this show.
Well, I can answer that right now too.
I very much think he is a Fox employee.
He's a Fox man. Giving another quote from him, he said, quote, Punk said, originally I thought it was a WWE thing and I was like, no thanks, but this is Fox. I'm not dealing with anybody in WWE. They explained to me what it was. I love Renee Young. She's a great person. It's along the lines of what I do with Cage Fury FC, which is the MMA promotion that he does commentary for. I prefaced it by saying, I'm not going to come in and dump all over stuff just to dump on it. That's old Phil. Mm-hmm. But if it's bad, I'm not going to pretend that it's anything but bad. They want to present it like it's a real sport and just have a show that recaps stuff. That is what he said. So mm-hmm. I think this confirms that we are going to get talk about other promotions, as well.
Is great. I'm excited for, mm-hmm. especially if Renee Young is there. Maybe she'll finally be allowed to talk about her husband. Mm-hmm. John Moxley did.
She did on one episode. They were talking about the Shield was great, and she's like, yeah, I really like the Shield, and like smiled at the camera. That is the thing that she did.
Yeah. It's just weird the idea that when that brief time where she was still doing commentary and Jon Moxley had already debuted in AEW where she's just not allowed to mention that she's married now. Yeah. She's just Renee Young.
Mm-hmm. I think what sticks out to me in all those things I just quoted from CM Punk is the thing about that's the old Phil. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he has kind of If because he's stepped away from wrestling, the kind of negative passion that he would have that has made him outspoken and critical in bad ways, maybe he has kind of grown out of that a bit. And because he was upset with the way that AEW approached him and critical of them texting him, maybe this is actually going to be the best thing for WWE that he's going to come on this show and actually kind of be a shill for WWE and be like, I don't like,
and just rip AEW.
You all think I would like AEW, but I don't. Yeah, I think that might be the early returns, is that I think he's gonna be more on the side of WWE.
But then that makes me really beg the question, what is the real intention on his part? Is he at this point, is he doing it just to be the counter to what the wrestling community wants him to do? It's because I mean, look, yeah, he's CM Punk, but that's, you don't want to immediately fight back against the wrestling crowd that yes is accepting you to an extent, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a wrestling fan, I don't like that. If he's gonna go on there and just crap on AEW and be this WWE shill, then I'm losing respect for CM Punk very rapidly.
What do you think will happen on the show tonight that he's on?
I think that again, being that he's a Fox employee, he can bring up AEW and he can talk about things they're doing wrong or even things they're doing well, and WWE can't touch him.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think he definitely will bring up AEW one way or another on this show.
And so I'm hoping that he's going to approach this from a guy who used to just love professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he's going to be able to approach it from that angle and just say that, look, WWE and AEW are different things. They each bring something positive and something negative to the table. And I don't know.
Yeah. I think, what do you think the headline at the end of this episode? Do you think there's going to be anything that he says that is truly groundbreaking? Or do you think he's going to be just I'm here to do this job of analyzing what's going on?
I don't think there's going to be anything groundbreaking. I mean, unless they decide second episode to be like, and CM Punk's return to the ring confirmed. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Which I don't see that coming maybe anytime soon.
We're going to talk about that in less than a minute.
Survivor Series is in Chicago.
Yeah, before we get to that, I think it's something we don't know yet because we are not Phil Brooks, is whether he took this job because he was offered an unrefusable deal to do another big broadcasting opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, on a network he doesn't have any ties in yet. Like, it makes sense on paper to take this job, and maybe he was paid a lot more to mm-hmm. do it than he normally would. Or is he doing it because he has any desire whatsoever to get back in wrestling? Because he's really, really been touting this movie he's been in and trying to yeah. do more acting, and like it's done well.
Since he left, he has been adamant that he has no interest in wrestling again. Mm-hmm. And I would bet that right now he probably has no intention of getting back in the ring. But I think when you are surrounded by something like wrestling, something that you once upon a time loved dearly, I think when you're surrounded by it and it's your new day to day and you have to, you know, study back up on it, I think mm-hmm. I could see him coming around back to the idea of like, yeah, I do want to get back in the ring.
We've talked multiple times in this show about the idea of wrestling fans having hiatuses where they leave and come back, and mm-hmm. we talked about CM Punk bringing us back in to wrestling. Yep. So I think there would be some poetic justice if he brought himself back into it after taking some time away, or yeah, was definitely. Brought back into it by the fans, kind of.
Yeah.
So I guess let's get to it with our remaining time. The final W, when is CM Punk getting
All
back
the
in
time,
the ring?
Baby.
When is he getting back
he
in the ring?
He never stopped, baby.
Survivor Series is in Chicago. I guess technically it's in like Rosemont, Illinois, but it's in Chicago on yeah. Sunday.
Look at that Chicago crowd.
Yeah. What chances out of zero, like 0 to 100, give me a number, do you have a Punk appearing on the show? I'm going to give you a few of these. Yeah.
Okay.
So what percent chance do you give him of appearing on the show?
In any capacity.
Like appearing like either in a video pre-taped for the show. Not just like not an ad for WWE backstage, but like a thing taped where he's like, hey there, Survivor Series fans, or like, hey there, like WWE fans, here's a thing. Or him just being shown on camera or showing up in a vignette yeah. or anything.
In any capacity,
mm-hmm.
right now I'm gonna say like 50-50.
Oh wow, that's pretty high. I like it.
But like, I mean, just for like a promo.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't even necessarily have to do like, hey, Survivor Series fans, but like mm-hmm. they could do a promo of him on like the backstage set. Just yeah. like,
he doesn't have to be there physically.
He doesn't yeah. have to be there physically. Like if you just show him in a video on the Titantron of him like acknowledging Survivor Series or something like that, like it's going to get a huge pop.
Mm-hmm.
So if that qualifies as any capacity, I'd say 50-50.
What chances do you give of CM Punk appearing between gorilla position and the ring in any capacity? Being out there on the stage.
In person?
Yeah.
Ooh, like less than 10.
Yeah.
Well, no.
I will say like 10 feels about right. To
10
me.
Feels about right for just like showing up. Mm-hmm. Wrestling, like that's
a zero. But what? 0, but 0, here's 0. The last one. What percent chance do you give of him getting involved in the outcome of a match?
Like 2.
We're saying
it's
there's
so
a chance,
slim,
people.
Because that's, we have to assume that the 10% chance of him showing up at live, and then like also the idea of him getting back in the ring, like I don't think it's gonna happen.
What are the chances of him wrestling a match in the next 2 years?
Oh. Damn, see, you got me with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe 50-50.
I think that's like 55-45 now in favor of him wrestling.
I don't know.
I think the door is open, and sometimes it's all it takes.
Yeah.
If let's assume he is going to wrestle again. Mm-hmm. If he's going to have a return match, what do you think is the most likely? Or like what do you think is most likely and what would you book him as?
What is most likely to happen and what would I like to see happen?
Mm-hmm.
What is most likely to happen would be... I think, knowing WWE, unfortunately, I think most likely would be a one-off WrestleMania match with a returning John Cena.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that would be most likely.
Mm-hmm.
Followed very closely by, like, maybe a Punk versus Brock 2 with Heyman in tow. You could do like CM Punk versus Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins to follow up on that Shield angle.
Yeah, that could be kind of cool.
Yeah,
I think Punk getting involved with Brock kind of makes sense too for mm-hmm. reasons we talked about at the top of this show.
What I want to mm-hmm. see?
Yeah, what do you want to see happen?
Oh, I want to see CM Punk versus Samoa Joe.
Oh, yeah. 60 minute draw like they used to do in Ring of Honor.
Give me a taste of that return feud.
Mm-hmm. I think the chances of that happening are probably pretty low, just because like if they're going to bring it back, it's not going to be for very long. I think it's not going to be for
very long,
yeah.
And Samoa Joe is... Granted, they treat Samoa Joe fairly well,
mm-hmm.
but he hasn't been in the main event picture in quite some time.
He hasn't been in a big money match on like a
yeah.
big pay-per-view.
And also I don't see WWE like banking too much on people knowing the Ring of Honor history between the two. So yeah, yeah, it's not the money match, but it's what I want to see.
This is a weird thing where for me what I think the most likely match is and what I actually would like to see, I think are the same for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have the big, like, Gaga match at a WrestleMania. I don't think he'd be out there doing, like, a technical classic.
No.
Like, he would go back to doing something a bit easier. And I think what they would do, and what is most likely, is to finish the storyline that never really happened and have a mixed tag match of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon versus CM Punk and AJ Lee.
Really?
I think that's what would happen. AJ Lee has also been tweeting about this, has tweeted about like, oh, has things been happening in wrestling? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, she's been very coy. And I think that that is a match that sells a pay-per-view.
I like it just because you get the CM Punk Triple H feud conclusion mm-hmm. that like we never get, and like that was really the heart of it,
yeah,
during CM Punk's like big run. So mm-hmm. I would like it. I'm curious what AJ Lee is up to now, because I know
she's
not
an author.
Wrestling more. She's an author, she's writing
yeah.
books,
yeah, and comics now too, I believe. I think uh-huh. she's I want to say she's on the like staff writing the Captain Marvel comic currently.
Okay.
She's definitely writing like a female comic.
I mean, she's yeah. she's a very talented writer.
Yeah.
Her books have done very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious how interested she would be returning to the ring. For those I guess we haven't really mentioned her. AJ Lee is CM Punk's real life wife.
Mm-hmm.
She was a massive player in the WWE women's wrestling
mm-hmm.
Division.
Big part of the movie Fighting With My Family.
Yeah,
she's the final boss yeah. of that movie.
She's the final boss that Paige has to defeat. She was like one of the original female wrestlers who was credited with like starting the women's revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, she's awesome. She's great.
She was critical of Stephanie McMahon taking a bunch of credit for the women's revolution mm-hmm. when it finally happened,
yeah.
Saying like there were a lot of things she did when I was there that held us down, which also plays into my fantasy booking of that mixed tag match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing about CM Punk as a character is that he works best when he is paired against someone who is similar in one way to him, but diametrically opposed in another. Mm-hmm. And I say that like that him and John Cena are similar in their ability to be charismatic talkers, but yes. they're diametrically opposed as like the guy the company doesn't want and the guy the company gifted everything to. Mm-hmm. He worked really well in great feuds against Jeff Hardy, and that they're both like free-minded expressionists. Like they're both artsy people, but one loves drugs and the other hates drugs. And like, and I think that the person who sticks out the most to me right now as being different enough from Punk, because like there are now so many people like him on the roster, is Triple H. I think that they are both people who their similarity is that they're from the same era now and understand like how to sell something, but they have completely different business philosophies about what that is. And I think that is kind of the selling point of that match. They have a different idea of business ethics, to quote Billy Madison.
Business ethics.
Yeah. So I think that's what would make the most sense to me. Quickly, with our time left, is there a world where he wrestles in a non-WWE ring again?
It's possible, because, like, again, he signed a contract with Fox, so he could still go to AEW, I guess. It's possible he could still go back to Ring of Honor. He could still go to New Japan or something.
I think New Japan is much more likely than those two. I think AEW's tough with the Fox contract.
You think it's much more likely he'd go to New Japan?
Yeah. I think AEW's so hard with that Fox contract now. I think Ring of Honor would be so lucky to get. Like, if he's like, I'm only going to wrestle with a big enough bag, Ring of Honor's out of the running. Like,
Well, we know Ring of Honor's parent company has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Sarah about this with Impact and what they're going to do if Tessa Blanchard leaves that company.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And so my point was basically that the companies themselves, like Ring of Honor and TNA or Impact, don't necessarily have a lot of money at their disposal. But if they have a reason for their parent company to give them some money,
mm-hmm.
like maybe a returning CM Punk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Ring of Honor might be getting a budget increase if it's going to include CM Punk's contract. So
yeah, that's true.
It's possible, but it's unlikely.
Yeah. I see the Wrestle Kingdom one-off match that is Kenta versus CM Punk.
Oh my. Yes.
I just blew your mind with that one. Like that.
Yes. Oh God. I love
talking
that.
About people that. Who have one thing in common, and then are diametrically opposed. I think that would
be amazing.
Yeah. I think that might actually be the most likely out of all of these. I have no like insider tip about that.
I would love for it to happen, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it's likely. Like Punk, like from what I've seen in the last couple of years, Punk seems like a guy who's very much just like, if that's what you want, I'm not doing that.
Well, we've gone for an hour and a half, which is as long as he went on his third match with Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor, I believe. Is there any other big things flashing out in your mind about CM Punk that we haven't mentioned that I feel like we should? He brought back WWE ice cream bars single-handedly.
Oh, yeah. From that promo.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, CM Punk, he holds a very important place in the history of professional wrestling. He may not seem like it to the outside audience, but like to professional wrestling fans, like CM Punk he's one of those like guys who means so much to the business, and that like he's gonna be like his name is gonna be around forever.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he's on the level of like Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, like CM Punk. Like he arguably may not have like had the same longevity that they did in their careers, but his impact is arguably the same.
Mm-hmm. I put him on the same level as Bret Hart, and that he may have never had as much demographic crossover as like Hulk Hogan and The Rock. He certainly was just as he's just as famous in wrestling, and outside of wrestling, he is a guy that a lot of other famous people like. Yeah. Like ESPN people love CM Punk, Fox Sports people love CM Punk, the comic community loves CM Punk, the stand-up comics, like he's a big part of Mark Maron Like, he's been on that show a lot. He's been on the TV show as well, although that may have been Colt Cabana who bridged that gap, so maybe that's less of a thing now.
I was going to say, why hasn't CM Punk been on GLOW, man?
He's definitely an unofficial consultant. I've heard Mark Maron talk about asking him a lot of questions about the wrestling, like, before going into it. He's someone who the punk music scene, he is known by important people in other industries. I think that will always keep him, at the very least, like, just on the other side of the door, into being like this big mainstream star. And I think it wouldn't take much for him to become it. I really do think that this movie I've mentioned a few times, Girl on the Third Floor, this is not an ad for that movie, but I know that it is one of these, you know, it was South by Southwest and some other film festivals, and it was like surprisingly really good horror movie with like surprisingly good performance by him. So I think, you know, if that does well this next year, if it does well enough, maybe CM Punk the actor just starts happening, and then all this is a moot point. But we'll see.
We shall see.
So when you're done listening to this, everyone go watch WWE Backstage at 11 or tape it, which is what I'm going to do. And the world waits with bated breath to see what CM Punk is going to say. So that's the end of our episode. Tyler, do you got anything you want to plug?
Nah.
Good, great. I don't either. I'll say, as a reminder, if you want us to answer questions in the Kayfabe 5000, which I promise will come back to this show at some point, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email them to us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. As always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. Hi, Colt Cabana. That's it.
How you doing?
Yeah, how you doing, Colt Cabana?
I was gonna start playing Cult of Personality on my phone, but
I listened to it four times. I listened to it four times as research for this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.